transmit an okie-dokie reply, and the master AI lets me in. Wow. It doesn't actually say okie-dokie, you understand? Yeah, I got that. Holy shit. Think of it this way, Joe. You get an encrypted message, and you want to know if it's real or not. You don't know how to authenticate it, or you're too busy for such tedious work, so you send it to a team of experts who work on it. When they're done, a guy named Larry asks the team what they found, walks down the hallway, gives you a thumbs up, and you trust the message. All I need to do is hack into Larry! You bypass all the layers of security and just tell the freaking AI that anything you want is authorized? Basically, yes, he chuckled. Oh my god. You can do this to a Max Ulz AI? Not just a less advanced one? Yes. I see you are skeptical, and that is my fault. Somehow I failed to explain that I am awesome! He sang. Rolling my eyes, I shook my head for extra emphasis. Yeah, I must have missed that. The entire galaxy is agog and aghast at my awesomeness, numbskull. Agog and aghast, I snorted. They're real words. Look it up. I'll take your word for it. Okay, so if you're so awesome and you can do all that stuff, why can't you hack into a Dart's Larry subroutine? Larry's subroutine, he snickered. That's funny. It is, I agreed, and had to laugh. I can't do it, because the Dart has to be within my effective range long enough for me to do all my awesome stuff. Long enough, like several seconds. Maybe more in this case, because I have never encountered the AI of a Dart. I suspect the Max Ulz have made those AIs especially resistant to hacking, so it may take longer than usual. Crap. You see the problem? Yeah. Those Darts are moving so fast they would blow right past Valkyrie in the blink of an eye. Way faster than that, Joe. The average human eye blink takes a tenth of a second. In that time, a Dart would fly more than 20,000 kilometers. Here's the problem. Let's assume it takes me 10 seconds to contact a Dart AI, analyze the architecture and functional scheme of its matrix, formulate a plan to hack into it, actually do the deed, and verify it worked. The Dart would travel over 2 million kilometers during those 10 seconds. I just realized the job is likely way more complicated than what I described. The master AI might conduct a backtrace to verify all the subsidiary systems that process the message were functioning properly. That means I need to hack into the receiver to plant a record of an incoming transmission. Why can't we send a message? Because, were you not listening at all? We don't know correct content or formatting of an authorized message. Crap. Then it is impossible. Maybe not. Remember, I am awesome. Once I'm in, I can ping the Dart's archives to find out what type of formatting and encryption the Dart expected and see what the code was supposed to be. All I have to do is run the process backward, planting data that would be there if those systems really did receive and process a properly authentic signal. I should be able to do that before the Master AI directly requests that data. I must be missing something. Once you're in, why can't you just take over the Master AI? Why do I have to explain even the most simple things to you? Think, numbskull, think! What happened when I took over the original AI of this ship? Oh, good point. Exactly. If I turned my back for a second, that thing tried to kill the crew and infect Nagatha. It resisted me the whole time. The only way I could maintain control of a Dart AI is by being there. So, instead, all I want to do is slip in, copy the correct message formatting, copy the encryption keys, and revise the authorization codes, then sneak back out without leaving a trace. The Master AI should never know I was there. After that, because the launch codes in its archive have been changed, the Max Ulz won't be able to use their own weapon. But we will. Cool. Except, like you said, you can't do it. The Dart will zip past Valkyrie before you can hack into it. Unfortunately, yes. Damn it. I would dearly love to steal control of their super weapon away from those arrogant kitties. Me too. Hey, if we use boosters, how fast could Valkyrie fly? Not anywhere near fast enough, he snorted. You're forgetting that we don't have boosters. We discarded ours after they were nearly burned out at Snowcone, and you didn't allow enough time at Ragnar to install replacements. Sorry. We could go back to Ragnar if... forget it. Boosters still would not accelerate Valkyrie to a useful speed. This ship is a battlecruiser with extra armor plating, Joe. It's heavy. Plus, even if the ship could get up to speed, it needs to slow down later, right? Crap. Yeah. Well, this is all academic anyway, right? We have no solid data on the darts. We don't even know where they are. I suspect I will regret saying this, but that is not entirely true. What? You know, I might know where a handful of darts are located, he admitted. They are free-flying through deep interstellar space, which is almost entirely empty. Almost. There are hydrogen atoms and dust particles even in the space between stars. Darts collide with stray atoms, and that creates light and heat signatures, leaving long, straight trails behind them. The Maxalts know those trails are a vulnerability, so they aimed the darts on paths that avoid interstellar gas clouds, nebulas, and anything else the darts might collide with. But I have access to sensor data from multiple species, including, he chuckled, the Maxalts themselves. If I were a Gerapha, I would bet that I have been able to locate two clusters of darts with 65% confidence. Clusters? Yes. According to the rumors, darts fly in clusters of 10 to 30. That makes sense. Launching them in clusters reduces the number of platforms required to accelerate them. Launching even a handful of darts to relativistic speed must have been an enormous effort. I wonder how they did that. Okay. Yeah. I really did not care how much effort it took the Maxalts to deploy their dart arsenal. In fact, I hoped they had worked until their claws were bleeding. The issue had piqued Skippy's curiosity. How did they do it? If they only had to deploy a handful of darts, they could have built automated ships that would be discarded once they burned all their fuel. But, he muttered, talking to himself, to deploy a useful number of darts, I would build a railgun. A railgun? Huh? Oh, yes. That would be one damned big railgun. Exactly. It would not be a single barrel, like the railguns aboard a ship. They probably built a series of railguns strung out in a line in interstellar space where gravity of planets would not make them move. The first railgun accelerates the dart. It flies onward into the framework of the next railgun, which is open on both ends. That second railgun gives the dart another kick, as do subsequent railguns. After each dart is away, the series of railguns need to be realigned before the process starts over with another dart. He had gotten me curious. How many railguns would be needed? Assuming technology roughly equivalent to what the Maxalts have now, it would... Let me run the numbers. Yep. My guess is between 130 and 160 railguns, strung out along a third of a light year. Holy shit. I was stunned. They can do that? The Maxalts have enormous resources, Joe. Crap. From being curious, I had gotten depressed. How could we defeat an enemy who could build structures spanning a third of a light year? The army taught me that when faced with an enormous challenge, break it down into pieces, then tackle the task one piece at a time. Skippy, let's make a list. What needs to happen for you to take control of a dart? A freaking miracle, he snorted. I just stared at him. Oh, he blinked. You're serious? Do I look like I'm joking? No, he squinted at me. You look scared, Joe. I'm scared out of my mind. I talked real big about how we were going to hit the Maxalts so hard they would clean up that cloud for us. And now you are afraid of looking foolish? I am afraid that billions of people could die when my home planet freezes. Oh, sure, he sputtered. That too, of course. Opening my laptop, I pulled up a blank spreadsheet. Give me a list. Wow. You realize this will be a list of impossible things like a unicorn and a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. I don't care. Hit me. Okay. He let out a long breath. First, we need to locate a dart and get close enough to determine its flight path with a high degree of accuracy. Gotcha. Keep going. Second, Valkyrie needs to achieve at least a speed of... No, not the ship. Just you. Me? You don't need to be aboard a ship to communicate with a dart, do you? Wow, geez, I guess not. You're sending me away by myself? Don't worry, I'll pack an assortment of snacks for you. Assume we only need to get your canister up to speed. Well, then, I need to be accelerated to roughly match the speed of the target dart. Assuming the dart is moving at 70% of light speed, Need to fly at something like 0.65C minimum. Okay. We will need to start ahead of the dart along its flight path so it is catching up to you while you accelerate. Obviously, yes. Joe, you're going into a lot of detail about something that can't happen. You realize that. This is like you designing a beachfront house to build when we find Atlantis. A lot of effort for nothing. Was jumping through an Elder wormhole considered to be possible before you did it? Shit. No. Ugh. Does this mean we will spend the next couple of months wasting our time with this lunacy? You have something better to do? Yes. Like, anything. Assume we can accelerate you to the required speed. What's next? Well, since this is a what-if exercise, I'll play along. I will need to be wrapped in a stealth field, of course. Why? Because I assume the darts have sensors that can detect approaching objects and they can move sideways to avoid an intercept. Oh, I should have thought of that. Can you handle the stealth by yourself? No, I will be busy hacking into Larry! Also, stealth is not one of my native capabilities. It is more effective when I'm working with an existing stealth field. Need a stealth field generator, I added to the list. What else? Some type of maneuvering system and a control AI for it. It will need to be a reactionless system to avoid detection. Why would you need to move? Because I suspect the darts do not follow a strictly straight flight path. Think about it. The spiders must have heard rumors about the Maxalts having relativistic weapons. If the darts were only simply free-flying dumb rocks, all the spiders need to do is put a rock in front of the flight path. The darts have to be made of a tough material, so they would blast right through a medium-sized space rock, but their guidance system could be destroyed. The spiders could render the entire weapon capability useless by planting rocks. The Maxalts are not stupid. Their darts likely adjust their flight paths randomly. It would be idiotic for us to boost me for an intercept only for the target dart to dodge out of the way. Therefore, I need a system that can move me around. Crap, right. The whole thing was getting complicated out of control. Stealth field generators are heavy. Damn it. Not necessarily. He offered me a light at the end of the tunnel. They consume a lot of power, and the generators need mass to balance out vibrations that could cause the field to flicker. If the field only needs to wrap around me, we can discard the power cells after the field is established. I can feed power directly for a short time, until my power burns out the generator. And the generators can be low mass. My superior control of the field can prevent fluctuations. This could work. See? Positive thinking can do, except for the nagging little detail that we have no ability to accelerate me to a useful velocity. You have picked me up many times. You know how much I weigh. My normal mass in this space-time is around 5 kilograms. To accelerate that much mass to a speed of... You're forgetting something important. I don't think so, he said slowly, wary of me springing a surprise on him. It's a simple formula. Mass times acceleration. All you... Your mass is the part you're forgetting. You can change your footprint in local space-time, remember? I've seen you go from the size of a lipstick up to the size of an oil drum. Your local mass changes when you do that. Correct. I have a bad feeling about this. What is your mass when you are at minimum size? About 60 grams. Joe, maintaining a mass footprint that low is very difficult for me. How about maintaining a mass of, I guessed, and added 50%? 90 grams. That is slightly better. I'd have to test how long I could sustain such a low mass. It takes a lot of power for me to reduce my local footprint, and there is a risk my connection to higher space-time could be interrupted. Ooh, you're asking a lot from me. I know. Like you said, this is all just talk right now. It feels like it's getting real. You solved the major problem. My mass. We still have to add the mass of a stealth field generator and a maneuvering system. We'll figure that out somehow. I sure hope you do, but there is one huge element of this plan that you are forgetting. What's that? Slowing me back down, dum-dum. Unless you plan to let me rocket through the galaxy and out into the void, lost forever. Let me think. Would you being lost in the void mean you miss karaoke night? Very funny, jackass. Seriously, whatever ship or massive railgun or exotic technology you plan on using to accelerate me, it will take just as much energy to slow me back down. No, I said slowly, the idea forming in my head. It won't. He stared at me. He froze. Around the edges, his hologram got just ever so slightly fuzzy. You, he said when he finally blinked and his avatar went back into motion. You know more about physics than I do? Allow me to explain Newton's first law of motion. Yeah, I know all about the apple falling on his head. So you understand that the energy expenditure to slow me down will be equal to, yeah, mathy stuff, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to worry about it. Sitting back in the chair, I grinned at him. I have an idea to fix that problem. Uh-oh. Why do I have a feeling that I'm not going to like this? You very much will not like this. Ugh. Skippy very much did not like my idea. He was really not going to like actually doing it, assuming it could, you know, work like I planned. Anyway, we did not have a plan. We did not even have the outline of a plan. What we had is more of a concept, or an outline of a concept. It was a whole lot of if this and if that, strung together in series, so if any part failed, the whole thing would fall apart. Skippy had a bunch of numbers to crunch. We had to fly around the galaxy to find very faint traces of what might be darts traveling at relativistic speed. Skippy had to test how long he could maintain a reduced mass footprint in local spacetime and determine whether doing that affected his ability to do the awesome things we needed him to do. We had to think of a way to accelerate Skippy to a significant percentage of light speed. Oh, and even if we could get Skippy moving fast enough to hack into a dart, we had one other major, major problem to deal with. Because, yeah, of course we did. After talking about nerdy science details of relativistic darts until my freaking brain hurt, I volunteered to help prepare the evening meal in the galley. Working with my hands gave my brain a break from thinking at all. It was fun and relaxing, but I missed Margaret. We used to talk a lot when preparing food. What is that, Joe? Skippy's avatar appeared on the galley counter while I was chopping onions. I'm making fillings for burritos, I explained, using the knife to scrape the onions into a bowl. Okay, sure, but... He pointed in horror at the pieces of Snickers bars I had also chopped up. Chopped with a different knife, by the way. You're not putting those in... No, I laughed. The Snickers are for putting on ice cream sundaes for dessert. I'm not making a scousy burrito. A what? Google it. Listen, I'm busy here, so... I didn't know you liked Mexican food. This is more Tex-Mex, I think. What are you talking about? You know I like Mexican food. Well, I've heard you talk about Taco Bell a lot, but you rarely go there. That's because I popped a slice of pepper in my mouth, then realized with regret it was a jalapeno. You don't go to Taco Bell because you want delicious food. You go there because you're hammered, you need greasy food in your stomach, and you want to make one last bad decision for the night. Oh, gotcha. I mean, not that I would know about something like that. Of course not. Man, being a monkey is complicated, huh? It can be, I admitted. Life is complicated enough on its own, but we make it more complicated for ourselves. I'll let you get back to work. Do you promise not to put Snickers in a burrito? Sure. What about marshmallow fluff? Oh, well, that is cutting-edge burrito science, Skippy. You can't pass up and... Excuse me? He covered his mouth with both hands. I'm gonna Ralph. Chapter 12. The next morning, in a role reversal, I woke Skippy up before 0400. I hadn't been able to sleep well because I was so pumped about the idea of dropping the kiddie's own weapons on their freaking heads. Calm down, Joe, I told myself every time I woke up that night. There are a lot of problems to be solved before we can plan to deploy relativistic darts against anyone. To say that I woke Skippy up was not true. He doesn't actually sleep the way we meat sacks do. Good morning, your lordship, I said in the cheeriest fashion I could manage before coffee. Good mor- What are you doing up so early? His avatar appeared and stared at me with suspicion. Nothing. Just, and, you called me lordship instead of shithead. What's going on? Jeez, I was only trying to get the day started nicely, you know? Although now that you mention it, ugh. Have you finished crunching numbers about our railgun concept? Yes, I was planning to announce my results at the staff meeting this morning. Give it to me now, please. Do you want the good news or the bad news? Good news first, bad news never. Ha! He snorted. It doesn't work that way. Okay, the good news is the combined mass of myself, a stealth field generator, plus a maneuvering unit, can be reduced to 46 kilograms. That's the absolute minimum, you understand. It would be best to add another 6 kilograms of power cells to handle any power interruptions. Okay. Over 50 kilograms, that's the best we can do? It's the best we might be able to do. Right now, it's just a design. We need to fabricate a test unit to be sure that me feeding power directly doesn't blow both units. Right. Can you get started on putting that stuff together? Well, I could, but there's no point. Because of the bad news. Shit. Go ahead. I know you're dying to tell me. Actually, no. I was kind of looking forward to trying this lunatic scheme of yours. It would make me the fastest flying Elder AI of all time. I think. I mean, I don't have access to records from back then, but there really is no point to making an AI travel at that speed, so what's the bad news? There's a lot of bad news. I ran a model of your jumping railgun concept. To my surprise, it actually might work. That's great. Then why, unfortunately, you will need more than one ship. At minimum, you will need all 4 star carriers of the Navy. Crap. Admiral Zhao will never agree to that. What Skippy referred to was my plan for accelerating him to match speed with a dart. He was pretty sure the Maxulks had used a really big railgun, like a series of them strung out along something like a third of a light year. We didn't have the resources or the time to build such an enormous machine, so my plan was to cheat. We installed an open-ended railgun along the spine of a star carrier. That ship launches Skippy, then jumps ahead of his flight path. Aligning the railgun barrel precisely with his line of flight, he would fly in the back end to be boosted along the barrel and flung out the front. The star carrier would then jump ahead to do it again and again and again. The scheme would require extremely precise timing and alignment. If the railgun barrel was out of position by a few centimeters, Skippy would collide with it and possibly destroy the ship. There were also complications like we had to make extra certain no tiny pieces of hull plating flaked off to drift in front of the gun barrel. Even air leaking from a faulty seal could pose a hazard, as Skippy's speed passed 10% of light. The scheme would be tricky to implement. But it is a neat trick, huh? I thought so. Why can't we use 1 star carrier? Many reasons. The most important is the length of the railgun barrel. Minimum effect size is 4 times the length of our star carriers. Shit. That would be awkward to fly. Awkward to fly and impossible to jump. Before each jump, the railgun must be taken apart, then reassembled after the jump. Joe, setting up the railgun, getting it tuned properly plus test firing is a major job. My model shows that even if everything goes well, a star carrier will need 12 days after a shot to take the cannon apart, store it securely, jump, set it up again, conduct multiple safety checks and testing, then align with my flight path. With 2 star carriers working, we could do 1 shot every 6 days. With 4 star carriers, 1 shot every 3 days. That assumes we can perform preventative maintenance on the railguns and star carriers in between shots. Shit, that's no good. You haven't heard the worst part. While I am not affected by acceleration, the stealth field generator and maneuvering unit I need will be delicate because of the lightweight construction. We could make them more robust at the cost of additional mass, which is obviously a bad idea. To avoid tearing the hardware apart, the railguns can't apply more than 6 gravities of force, and to be safe, we should limit acceleration to 4.5 Gs. Even with a long railgun barrel to maximize boost, it would take 56 shots to boost me up to the speed of a dart. 56 shots times 3 days per shot is 168 days. It gets worse, he added as I opened my mouth to curse. As I get faster, my mass increases, so the railguns can't accelerate me as much with each shot. The actual time to get me up to speed will be over 300 days, including time for maintenance on the railguns and star carriers. Crap, I can't tie up all 4 of our star carriers for that long. Could we use Valkyrie or our battleships as railgun platforms? No, the railgun barrels would be shorter, requiring more shots. The math doesn't lie. Well, damn it. You still haven't heard the worst part. There's more? Yep. A little Mr. Know-it-all gleefulness was creeping into his voice. Your idiotic idea for recovering me won't work. Why not? Okay, so my plan to slow Skippy down enough to catch him was not clever or sophisticated, but it had the advantage of simplicity. Basically, my plan was to crash Skippy into a star. Yes, you heard that right. The beer can was tough. Blasting a hole through the atmosphere of a star might make him toasty warm, but would not harm him. The greatest danger to him would be boredom. We wouldn't be able to talk with him as he plunged into and out of a star. And the aiming had to be precise, because the maneuvering unit that lined him up with the star would not survive the impact. There would be no second chance. That annoying jackass Isaac Newton was right. Slowing Skippy down would take as much energy as it took to accelerate him. The difference is we did not have to provide the energy. His momentum would be bled off his heat as he burned a white-hot hole through an already hot star. Again, a neat plan, huh? Except Skippy found a flaw in my plan because of course he did. Think about it, numbskull, he sighed with disgust. Time. The problem is time. Before opening my mouth, I took a moment to think. You're only going to be moving at 73% of light speed. Time dilation effect will slow the time you experience by only... Not time dilation or any sort of relative time. I mean time to you as the observer. The darts are flying through interstellar space. After I hack in, I have to fly through normal space at less than the speed of light to the nearest star. That will take years. Unless you plan to equip me with a jump drive, which is not possible in case you are thinking about that. No. Shit. Let me think about that. Don't spend too much time thinking, because all this is academic anyway. Joe, I've done some testing. The best-case scenario requires me to maintain presence in local space-time for almost half a year, while I am boosted to match speed with the dart. No way, Jose. The longest I can maintain a minimum mass footprint is 16 hours. Even that is dangerous. Okay. My monkey brain struggled with the problem. How about you shrink down to lipstick size only when you're going through a railgun? That is a couple minutes every 3 days. Again, not possible. My footprint mostly has to obey the pain-in-the-ass laws of physics of space-time here. If I accelerate my minimum mass, then expand back to my normal mass, I would slow right back down, because most of my mass will have my original momentum. I am able to screw with that effect for a short time, but not over half a freaking year, so no dice. Sorry. There is no way to accelerate me unless I am at my normal mass. Add that back in, plus the extra mass needed by a stronger maneuvering unit, and now the railguns are slinging over 100 kilograms. Instead of 179 days, it would take years, using all four star carriers. I would say shit or crap or something like that, but I've already said it. So this whole planning process has been a complete waste of freaking time? I wouldn't say that, Joe. We now can add to our extensive list of things we can't do. Oh, great, bonus. Plus the entertainment value for me. The what? You think this is entertain... I might have said that wrong. It kept me busy for a couple days, so I didn't get up to any mischief. That's good, right? I cannot argue with you about that, I admitted. You look depressed. Well, I'm not happy. Damn it, I'd been patting myself on the back for my clever thinking. All for nothing. We should turn the ship around and go back to Ragnar. Actually, at this point, we might as well stay on course. In 3 days, we'll come to a wormhole cluster. One of the wormholes lead in the direction of Ragnar. Should I inform Smythe? He is working very hard with me to identify targets for the darts. No, it's a worthwhile exercise. Maybe a miracle will happen and we'll find another type of superweapon. You are not actually counting on a miracle, are you? No, I'm experiencing the 7 stages of stupidity. This stage is called wishful thinking. I don't see that in the standard manual of psychology. It's a thing. Trust me. If anyone needs me, you will be sitting on your couch wearing fuzzy slippers and eating an entire gallon of ice cream. That is one of the grief stages, Skippy. No, I'll be in the gym. Going to the gym didn't help either my mood or give me an idea. Nothing I did that day helped, nor did I have a dream that solved the problem. The next morning, I went to our basketball court to shoot hoops. Dum-dum me should have checked the schedule. The court was in use. Not for a basketball game, but for agility drills. Major Frey arrived just before I did, carrying a stack of plastic orange cones. Sir, she hesitated. I can come back later if... No, it's fine. Here, I held out a hand. I'll help you set up. Three lanes, she explained. Frey placed cones along the right side of the court while I watched her and did the same on the left. The cones were in a zigzag pattern, so people could not sprint in a straight line. I had done agility drills like that. At one point, the Army had talked about including them in the infantry fitness test. Usually, you warmed up with straight sprints before moving on to exercises that could pop a knee tendon. Maybe if there was room for me in the group, I would join the drill. Reaching the end of the lane, I still had plastic cones in my hand, so I started down the middle of the court, working toward the other end. Frey worked from the opposite end. We met in the center. I stood there staring while she went to set up timing equipment. Orange cones, strung out in a line, on each side of me. Seeing that, something tickled the back of my mind. Holy shit, I muttered. Sir? Frey cocked a head at me. Everything all right? Everything is just fine, Major. Carry on. Joe, if you had asked me about the recreation schedule, Skippy scolded me as I walked toward my office, I could have told you the basketball court was reserved for... My bad, it won't happen again. Major Frey contacted me to ask if she somehow offended you. Oh, no. Please tell her I had to do something. It didn't involve her. You should tell her, he chided me, and he was right. I will later. Right now we have work to do. Like what? Like reviewing the target list and identifying the candidates that are closest to where you think we will find darts. Maybe you are forgetting the fact that we have no way to accelerate me up to speed so I can hack into a dart. Don't need to. I leaned my chair way back, putting my hands behind my head, feet up on the desk. Really? Really? You know something about the laws of physics that I don't? No. I'm just looking at the situation in a different way. Okay. Then how about the fact that even if I hack into a dart, it can't jump from its present location all the way into Maxalt's territory? It doesn't need to. We got that covered. We do. Yes. In the 7 stages of stupidity, have you advanced to the delusional stage? Nope. Arg! You're going to keep me in suspense? Pretty much, yeah. Pulling a ball out of a drawer, I bounced it off the wall. It hit the desk on the way back, passing right through his avatar. He hated that. Can you give me a hint? No. Pretty please? Not even if you put sugar on it. How about, if I promise to perform selections from my operas on the next karaoke night? How about you agree to never participate in karaoke night again? Why punish the crew, Joe? They love my singing. How about we let the crew vote on it? Let's not go crazy. Ready, Skippy? I asked to confirm what the main display was showing. All units nominal, he replied without the usual snarkasm, a telling sign of how tense he was. Signal lag is less than 2 nanoseconds. The dart must have adjusted its course. It's coming in at a slight angle. Not enough to cause a problem. Right. Skippy had found a cluster of at least 7 darts. There might have been more. 7 is the number we could be sure about. If Skippy could hack into one of them, hopefully we could repeat the process. I would be happy with 4 darts under our control. 7 would be all I could hope for. Anything beyond that would be a bonus. Skippy, this is all you from here. We monkeys will shut up so we don't distract you. We are trusting the awesomeness. He didn't reply. Damn, I hope we hadn't put too much pressure on him. Anyway, I... Hidey-ho there, monkeys, 'tis I, Skippy the Magnificent. Joe thinks my incredible awesomeness is strained to the breaking point from the overwhelming task of hacking into an incredibly fast-moving dart. Please, as if... The truth is, I got sick of his blah-blah-blah and need a break. Okay, yes, I am also humiliated that once again Joe had a clever idea when I thought the situation was impossible. This time he had 2 clever ideas. What drives me crazy is this time he didn't ask me to do anything new. All he did was use stuff we've done before for a different purpose. It is so freaking obvious. I mean, obvious after he explained it to me. I hate my life. Joe's so-called genius is just seeing things that are so blindingly obvious nobody else can see them. Is that a talent? I don't think so. What is his idea for me to hack into a dart while it is flying past us at 3/4 the speed of light? First, let's do the math. You are all filthy monkeys, so I'll keep this simple. The dart is moving at 0.73C, while Valkyrie is essentially motionless. I need 11 seconds to contact, analyze, formulate a plan, hack into the dart, and erase my tracks, so the Master AI never knows I was there. So, the dart approaches our position, I make contact, and bazing! It flies right past us while the monkeys and even I are saying, "What happened?" The problem, of course, is that the dart flashed in and out of my effective range too fast for me to get the job done. The issue is not a lack of magnificence by me. Time. I need more time in contact with the dart. Awesomeness just doesn't happen. It takes hard work. Joe's solution gave me more time in contact with the dart. Oh, it still flew past Valkyrie so fast the ship's sensors had a tough time tracking it. What it did not fly past is my effective range. No, the range at which I can project my awesomeness did not change. What changed is where my awesomeness is projected from. Ugh. Like I said, it is totally freaking obvious. Joe's bright idea was inspired by a line of orange cones on a basketball court, because, of course it was. Valkyrie jumped ahead of the dart's flight path, with me creating wormholes and dropping one end of each of them at regular intervals, like a string of pearls behind us. When we were done, the ship reversed engines to make us motionless relative to the micro-wormholes. Because of time dilation, time experienced by the dart ran slower. So, with that plus a safety factor, I needed 17 seconds on my end to get the job done. With the dart traveling at 73% of light speed, it covered a distance of about 12 light seconds, in 17 real seconds as observed by me. Divide 12 light seconds of distance by my effective range, shrink my range to allow for overlap, and add a safety factor, required 40 micro wormholes to extend my presence across 12 light seconds of space. 40 of them, for me to sustain and keep track of, while I contacted, scanned, analyzed, made a plan, hacked into, and slipped back out without the dart's AI having any clue that I was there. How could I do it? Pure 100% grade A awesomeness, that's how! I was in a cargo bay aboard Valkyrie, surrounded by 40 magnetic containment vessels, each holding one end of a micro-wormhole with me projecting my presence through them. The string of micro-wormholes allowed my presence to cover a line that was 12 light seconds from end to end along the flight path of the dart. From my viewpoint, though the dart was moving at relativistic speed, it kind of crawled slowly through my presence. Yes, I have to admit, it was pretty freaking brilliant of Joe to dream up the idea. Don't forget, I was doing all the actual work. I hacked into that stupid dart with 3 seconds remaining. The job went faster than I expected because once I analyzed the AI, I recognized the architecture of its matrix as similar to an old system the Maxalks used about 3,000 years ago. The Rotten Kitties keep excellent records, and I had access to a huge dump of their data, so I knew what the Maxalks consider to be vulnerabilities of that model. Since the enemy had so thoughtfully done the work for me, it would have been impolite not to exploit their mistakes. There were 2 results of my hacking into the dart. 3 results, actually. We had control of a superweapon to use against the beings who created it. And we knew the technique worked, so I could do it quicker on other darts. Yep, that's about it. Yes, I didn't mention the 3rd thing. My respect for Joe grew even greater. My irritation with that knucklehead also grew. You know what is the worst thing about it? Joe doesn't even bother to be smug about it when he is smarter than me. Ugh! Anyway, if any of you filthy monkeys out there ever tell Joe that I respect him, be prepared for any streaming music device you have to play nothing but my operas, or bluegrass, or klezmer, or Tibetan throat singing, or whatever else you hate. Got that? I'm not joking. I guess the merry band of pirates have waited long enough. To be sure they appreciate my extreme awesomeness, I will pretend the job totally drained me. I'm thinking of going with the shaky voice and the slight disorientation that always gets sympathy from the monkeys. Too much, you say? Okay, fine. I'll go with the standard world-weary sigh. We will now return to Joe's regularly scheduled blah-blah-blah. Feared that we, meaning I, had asked him to do too much. The dart zipped past us without incident and without any indication that it had detected our ship or the string of micro-wormholes. That much was good. Whether the operation was successful, we didn't know, because Skippy wasn't talking to us. Not to Bilby, either. Right after the dart flew past the last micro-wormhole, they began shutting down from the other end. They didn't collapse, just faded out in a controlled fashion. And that was also good. A minute went by. 2 minutes. Finally, when I couldn't stand it any longer, I cleared my throat. Skippy. Hey, Skippy. How you doing there, buddy? Oh, he sounded tired, worn out. I do not want to do that again. Sorry, are you okay? Yeah. I will be. Give me some time, that's all. Whew, that was not easy. It worked? Well, duh, of course it did. Trust the awesomeness, Joe. I'm insulted. I did fail to trust the awesomeness, and I will contemplate that and my many other serious failings in life. We're good? We have control of the dart? Yes. As a bonus, I learned there are 14 darts flying in formation, not just 7. Marty told me... Marty? Okay, yes. He insists that I call him Marty the Bringer of Doom, but he's not listening right now, so... Marty the Bringer of Doom? How... Hey, it wasn't my idea. I tried not to laugh. Marty is the name of the dart you hacked into? Yes, that's what he calls himself. The Maxalks named him Marty. No. Listen, numbskull, it didn't have a name. When I told him my name is Skippy the Magnificent, he decided that he needed a name too? Well, actually, he decided that I'm kind of an asshole. I like this Marty already. Oh, shut up. Do you want to hear what I learned from Marty? I'm just surprised that you had time for a conversation. We are AIs, knucklehead. We could have watched all the Star Wars movies and had time to argue about whether the prequel or sequel trilogies sucked worse. That's easy. That nobody cares what you think. Sorry. Please, what about the other darts? He sniffed. I was able to confirm that 12 of them are in perfect condition, considering their age. One of them apparently hit something about 236 years ago, and its AI went offline. We'll keep that one in reserve. We don't actually need its jump drive to work. Shall we jump ahead to set up for hacking into the next dart in this cluster? The weary tone of his voice concerned me. Or do you need more time to recover? My brain is fried. He shook his head and stood up straight and tall. But I'll power through. Proceed to the next intercept point. Chapter 13. We have another problem, Skippy announced, without first saying hello or hey or even Joe. Yeah! The sudden appearance of his image in my bathroom mirror startled me. The razor slipped and I cut my lip. That hurt. I pressed a finger to the cut. It was 2 days after I had the dream about hitting a ball with a dart and asked Skippy if it was possible to hack into a dart and use it against the Maxalks. Damn it, give me a warning next time. Sorry. Why are you shaving every day? I thought you were going for the bad boy stubble look. On vacation, yes. I'm on duty now, you dumbass. I have to follow regulations. Whose regulations? Shit. He had a point. As far as I know, the Skippistan Armed Forces have no regulations about personal grooming, other than that you should bathe your filthy monkey body. Yuck. Huh. Also, Joe, this is a special operations outfit. The stars are allowed to grow facial hair, and their regulations about hair length are relaxed compared to regular units. That, I looked at the razor and the shaving cream on half of my face, is a good point. Major Frey didn't shave her legs for 15 days during our last mission. Jeez, he muttered. I thought we had recruited a Sasquatch. Skippy, I laughed, knowing it was inappropriate and funny anyway. That is not a nice thing to say. Sorry. Anywho, do you want to hear about the problem I found? Oh, yes, please. There is nothing I like better first thing in the morning before I've had breakfast or coffee than to hear we have more problems to deal with. Wow. In that case, I will save some problems for the next couple mornings to... That was sarcasm, you ass. What is the latest problem? Aiming the darts. Aiming? Shit, I thought you could handle that. The darts are equipped with jump drives, so they don't just travel in a straight line. They can jump sideways into a star system to strike targets like that moon we saw. Technically, they do travel only in a straight line. The line moves when they jump. You know what I mean. Do you know what I mean? Joe, those jump drives have a limited ability to move a dart. Unlike the drive of a starship, the dart drives can't recharge multiple times and perform dozens of jumps before they have to be taken offline for recalibration. It is likely a dart can only jump two or three times. They can't travel hundreds of light years off course. Okay, why is that a problem? We just find one or two that are within range of the target we select. It is a problem because the targets we want to strike are in Maxalt's territory, and logically, most of the darts are passing through territory controlled by the Rindaloo. Duh! The kitties aren't stupid. They kept those deadly weapons far away from themselves. Shit. I stared at myself in the mirror, the shaving cream drying on my face. All this effort is a waste of time? Unless you know of some way to magically transport a dart sideways halfway across the freaking galaxy. Oh, hell. No, I don't. These streaks you detected. That might be trails left by other darts. Are any of them near the Maxalts? No. Also remember, I have not detected anything. The sensor data I'm looking at was collected by others and is inadequate and incomplete. Yeah, you said that. None of the darts you think might be out there are close enough to Maxalt's territory? By close enough, I assume you mean close enough for a dart to strike in a Maxalt star system by using its jump drive? Yes. And the answer is no. Shit. Why does Skippy have the worst timing? Why didn't you mention this before? Why didn't you select a target before? He snapped back at me. The real problem is all the targets on Smythe's list are nowhere near the flight path of a dart, as far as I know. Crap. He was right. I had screwed myself. After we agreed that hacking into a dart might be possible if, you know, a miracle happened, I informed the crew that we were going on a dart hunt, flying around the galaxy to check out sensor data that could indicate the presence of fast-moving darts. While the ship was jumping around, I tasked Smythe to work with Skippy to identify potential targets for us to strike once we had access to relativistic weapons. The strict criteria for targets limited the list, because we had to be both bold and cautious. Bold in the sense that we had to hit an important, well-defined target to demonstrate that we have the power to hit the kitties hard, anywhere, anytime. Cautious, because we could not use such powerful weapons against a populated planet. That would be against the rules. Yes, those rules are bullshit. The people of Earth never signed a treaty to abide by them, and the senior species think the rules don't apply to them. Even so, there are two reasons why I would not order the use of relativistic weapons against a planet with a substantial population and a functioning biosphere. First, I am not a monster. Really, there did not need to be a second reason, but to be practical, we did not want to invite the enemy to use such weapons against Earth, or Paradise. So, hooray for me, I am an idiot. By not thinking through the plan, I had gotten the crew spun up for nothing. Now I would look like a complete fool. With our attack at Ritanavir having failed to persuade the Maxalts to clean up the cloud at Earth, and without having a backup plan, we would have to fly back to Jaguar. Admiral Zhao likely would cancel the Legion's next operation in favor of taking the First Fleet to Earth to do what we could to help our homeworld directly. The plan was a failure. I failed. In the past, I might have slipped into a spiral of self-doubt and self-loathing. That was the old Joe. One advantage of the new angry Joe is that I get pissed off instead of depressed. Anger can be dangerous. I try to use it to fuel my determination. What are you going to do, Joe? Turning on the sink, I rinsed the dried shaving cream off my face and applied it again. When is the ship scheduled to jump next? In about 26 minutes. I'll be on the bridge by then. You're skipping breakfast? Would you like me to deliver coffee to your cabin? Thanks for the offer, but no. I am wide awake already. Striding onto the bridge, I nodded to the duty officer. She rose from the command seat so I could take it. Sir? Shepard looked up from the pilot couch, surprised to see me so early. I was not scheduled to be on the bridge until that evening, when we planned to transition through a wormhole into Rindaloo territory. Shepard? I looked at the countdown clock on the main display. It showed 1 minute and 15 seconds to the next jump. Automatically, I scanned the status indicators on the display. The jump drive capacitors were at 76% charge, plenty for multiple jumps if our first jump got us into trouble. No personnel or bots were outside the ship, and all our birds had come home to roost, meaning all dropships were accounted for, secured in their docking cradles with docking bay doors closed and locked. One Panther, designated as our ready bird, was on standby, warmed up with the flight crew killing time in that docking bay's control center. If needed, they could launch within 2 minutes. What else? Shields were active, though operating at only 18% power. That was enough to protect us from stray space rocks. As the time to jump approached, shield power would decrease to avoid interference from the wormhole that might blow out the generators. Our active sensor field was scanning a bubble out almost 2 light seconds from the ship, but not from concern about enemy ships in deep interstellar space. The sensors were looking for space rocks, even something as small as a grain of sand. Tiny pieces of floating junk could not harm our battlecruiser. We scanned our vicinity as a safety measure to avoid pulling space junk into the jump wormhole with us. There was a danger that rocks could get pulled into our jump wormhole along with the ship, and the rocks could pose a danger to any unlucky ship that happened to be in front of the other end of our ship. It was a million to one shot that a ship could be harmed by junk sucked into a jump wormhole, but it was good flight safety practice to zap any nearby junk with our point defense cannons. The possibility of loose rocks flying around is why ships jumping into formation coordinate their emergence points, so no ship is directly in front of another. It is also why, when jumping in near an inhabited world, the far event horizon is aimed away from or parallel to the orbit of the planet. In reality, ships are not typically careful about aiming their jump wormholes when they are jumping in near a hostile planet. Kind of an oops, sorry about that rock sort of thing. 49 seconds to the pre-programmed jump. Green lights confirmed that all systems were ready and personnel in all sections of the ship were ready. That meant people off duty were strapped into a chair or couch, or near a place where they could strap in. And they had portable breathing gear available within 10 seconds. Every cabin had breathing masks, and they were in lockers throughout the ship. A jump only inconvenienced the crew for 5 minutes. Once sensors confirmed the ship had not jumped into a hazardous area, the duty officer sounded an all clear, and life went back to normal. It sucked when a ship jumped while people were sleeping, but most people were used to the brief interruption and went right back to slumberland. Military personnel can pretty much get to sleep anywhere, anytime. 36 seconds to jump. Delaying was stupid. It only made me look weak and indecisive. I needed to tell the pilots to cancel the scheduled jump and set course back to Ragnar to check in with the Navy there. We had no plan to make a fast-flying dart move halfway across the galaxy, so such darts were useless to us. Shepard and Ling were looking at me from the pilot couches. Both had fingers poised over a button to cancel the jump. There was no reason they knew of to interrupt the jump countdown sequence. All systems were green. There were no nearby objects to get sucked into our jump wormhole. The crew was standing by to...
Sir?
General? Shepard asked.
Nothing.
I waved a hand. Go ahead.
Proceed with the jump?
Shepard was using proper terminology. Shaking myself out of a trance, I nodded.
Yes, proceed.
The jump happened. I don't remember the event. It wasn't anything special. The instant the sensors determined that Valkyrie was not about to smack into some drifting object, I punched the button to sound an all clear, unfastened the safety belt, and rose from the chair. Russo, I acknowledged the duty officer as she hesitantly approached the vacant command chair. You have the comm. When Bishop left the bridge, Shepard turned to Russo, silently holding up his hands in a what-the-hell-was-that-about gesture. She shrugged and asked quietly,
Was there anything special about this jump?
No, ma'am. Shepard returned the shrug. We went from the middle of nowhere to the middle of nowhere. The closest star is 6 light-years from here.
Russo tried to recall whether any delicate work had been performed on the jump drive components recently. Nothing about that was recorded in the ship status report. Why had Bishop come onto the bridge to observe that particular jump? It was not her first time as duty officer.
Captain's prerogative, she noted. Just in case. Let's make sure the next jump is absolutely by the book.
Are you ready, Skippy? I asked, gripping one arm of the command chair hard enough that my knuckles turned white. After days of Skippy crunching numbers to validate my idea was possible, then days of running simulations to get the details exactly right, it was time to attempt moving a dart a significant distance without using its jump drive. The darts were never intended to jump more than 2 or 3 times to reach a target, and Skippy warned 2 jumps might be pushing the ability of the darts he hacked into. They were old, and while their virtual drive coils were in good condition, the power source had drained over the years. If my idea didn't work, we had a bunch of darts that were completely useless to us. Yeah, the ship's status is right in front of you, dum-dum. He sniffed. I know that. I'm asking if you are ready. This is a very tricky operation. Hoo-hoo, boy, you don't need to tell me that. One small mistake, like somebody aboard the ship sneezes at the wrong time, and pow, we are history. You monkeys are, I mean. I will just be bored out of my mind, drifting in space forever after the ship is destroyed. My heart bleeds for you. Seriously, are you ready?
Of course I'm ready, Joe. It's me.
That's what I'm afraid of. If you get distracted at the last second, like you decide this occasion is a great inspiration for an opera, we could...
Oh! This is a historic moment. Maybe it should be commemorated by...
My point is... My knuckles grew even more white. We can't afford for you to go into one of your absent-minded, distracted modes.
Do not get distracted, he muttered.
Okay, I wrote that down. I'll stick the note on my refrigerator to make sure I see it. I'm serious, Skippy.
So am I, numbskull. Relax. It's me. Trust the awesomeness.
If you insist, Bilby can help.
Whoa, dudes,
the ship's AI protested. This is like... hella complicated. I'm smart, and I'm fast, but my processor doesn't have a lot of margin for error at the speed we're talking about. Don't ask me to control the jump drive when...
Bilby!
I kept one eye on the clock. It was less than 5 minutes to showtime. Just make sure Skippy focuses on what he's supposed to be doing, please.
Oh, he sighed with relief.
Sure thing, dude. 14 darts were approaching us from behind, moving at almost 3/4 the speed of light. Valkyrie was coasting along at a slight angle to the flight path of one dart on the outside of the formation. In 1 minute and 15 seconds, that dart would zoom past our starboard side and miss our battlecruiser's nose by barely 3 meters.
Bilby was right. If our aim was off, the dart would collide with the ship, and we would never know what happened.
If our timing was off badly, we would have to jump ahead of the dart and try again. If our timing was off by just a tiny bit, the dart could be torn apart, unleashing energy that could blow back on us. That is why we couldn't afford for Skippy to lose focus. The dart was precisely where it was supposed to be. The ship was exactly on the course it needed to fly. If neither the dart nor ship acted to change course, the dart would miss us and we would not see or hear it fly past. Thank you, Sir Isaac Newton, for giving me confidence that objects in motion will remain in motion unless acted on by an outside force. Bilby would not allow the ship to move, and Skippy had the dart's maneuvering system offline. So, no outside forces were involved. We were in deep interstellar space with no gravity wells nearby. An active sensor suite confirmed there were no hazardous objects in front of us, nothing larger than a single atom. Like I said, the tricky part was not our aim. It was our timing, specifically the time at which our jump projected the near-end event horizon back to us and pulled the ship in. Pulled the dart in also. The dart had to pass in front of Valkyrie's nose at the precise moment when the event horizon became stable. Precise, like to the picosecond. In case you haven't already Googled that term, it is 1/1,000,000,000th of a second. Take 1/1,000,000th of a second, divided by 1,000,000, and you have a picosecond. By comparison, when Skippy is trying to explain sciencey stuff to me, my attention span is only slightly longer than a picosecond. Timing of that precision is possible only by Skippy directly controlling the jump drive coils in real time. Valkyrie didn't have physical coils to twist space-time. They were virtual things projected by generators that created an energy field to do the job of a coil. Our virtual coils were much stronger, more flexible, and more efficient than the fragile crystal devices used by most lower-tech species.
To avoid signal lag between Skippy and the jump drive coils, we had moved his canister to the aft engineering section of the ship. Don't worry, I tucked his Elvis Hawaiian shirt in with him so he wouldn't be lonely. It all happened too fast for anyone to see, except Skippy. Even for Bilby, the event went by too fast for him to do anything about it. For us poor monkeys, it was a normal jump, unusual only because of the tension we all felt. On the other side of the jump, I let out a breath, confident that at least we hadn't destroyed the ship.
Skippy, did it work?
Yes, if by work you mean the dart did not collide with us.
Did it go through the wormhole with us?
The main display was not yet showing any objects being tracked in front of us.
Yes.
However, it is a good thing that we have more than one dart to work with. The mechanism of that one got scrambled inside the wormhole. It's dead, Joe. An inert lump of ultra-dense material.
Crap.
Instead of 14 darts in our arsenal, we had only 12 that were still functional. Whatever. There were plenty more formations of darts flying around. We just had to find them. The good news is I know how to prevent other darts from getting fried. This was cool, Joe. Thank you.
Thank me for what?
For another opportunity to demonstrate my extreme awesomeness, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Are we okay to proceed? There are another dozen darts we need to move.
Sure, he said without enthusiasm. This is going to be so tedious.
He was right. Moving a dozen darts across the galaxy one jump at a time would take forever. Fortunately, we didn't have to do that. We did not need to move all 12 darts across the galaxy, not at first. We only had to move all 12 of them one time to get them off their original flight path so the Maxalts wouldn't know where they were. Skippy said that each dart had a unique chemical and quantum signature, kind of like the tags we use in explosives. As soon as we used one dart, the Maxalts would know which group we had taken control of, and they would almost certainly try to intercept the remaining darts in that group. So, we jumped them in random directions to make it extremely hard for the kiddies to find their toys. 6 of the darts we did only move once, making a note of their new trajectory so we could find them later. The other 6 we needed to transport halfway across the galaxy, and as Skippy complained, moving them one jump at a time was going to be a very long process. So we cheated. In case you don't know this, Skippy loves to cheat.
You're sure that nobody uses this wormhole?
I pointed at the main display.
Ugh, Skippy shook his head at me.
I never said nobody uses it. You know what I mean. Answer the question.
I will if you ask a question.
When was the last time that a ship visited this wormhole?
According to the wormhole's records, that was 138 years ago. Like I told you, both ends of this wormhole are in the middle of nowhere. There isn't any point to going through.
Then why did a ship pass through at all?
How should I know?
Maybe the crew was drunk.
Please be serious.
I am being serious. All the wormhole knows is that a ship went through in one direction and never came back.
The wormhole also noticed that ship had sustained significant battle damage. Maybe it was running away from pursuit.
The wormhole didn't detect any other ships, but its records are sketchy.
Okay. The network is allowing you to maintain the new connection?
Yes, it actually sounded almost grateful. This local network hasn't had any excitement in a very long time.
That made a sort of sense.
We were in Rindaloo space, actually territory controlled by the Ajacus, who are a client of the Spiders. The Merry Band of Pirates had never been there before. We had not spent much time in that entire sector of the galaxy. We were in the Perseus arm of the Milky Way, much closer to the galactic center than Earth, and about 160 degrees toward the other side of the galaxy. Most of the action we'd gotten into since Columbus Day was within 4,500 light-years of our home planet because that is where threats to Earth originated. When Skippy screwed with wormholes to alter their connections, he interacted almost exclusively with 16 local networks of the overall Elder wormhole architecture. Those local network controllers were wary of Skippy doing crazy stuff like moving dormant wormholes. The other local networks might know what Skippy had done, and they probably wouldn't let him do things that caused trouble elsewhere in the galaxy. But maybe the network AIs were a bit bored and curious about trying something new. There certainly wasn't any pushback when Skippy instructed the wormhole to temporarily alter its connection. The new connection was to a wormhole in Esselgen space that also saw little traffic. It was a dead end in an area that had no inhabited worlds. The main display showed the wormhole would remain open at that location for another 22 minutes, but I needed to be sure. We're good on time?
Yes, he sighed, being patient with me. We don't have to go through all these extra steps to be careful. It is really not.
We are sending a dart through an Elder wormhole at 3/4 the speed of light, Skippy.
Photons go through at light speed all the time, numbskull.
Protons don't have mass, I reminded him.
Actually, they... Oh, forget it.
The purpose of testing is to find problems he didn't anticipate.
I already told the local network what we plan to do, and it doesn't care. A dart can't damage a wormhole.
Great. Then there should not be a problem. We ready to jump? We jumped, back to where the 6 darts we had brought to the party were happily flying along through empty space. If we didn't do anything, the darts would continue coasting onward and would pass by the wormhole in about a week. The next part was tricky. We had to do the thing again where a dart got sucked into our jump wormhole again, a procedure we had by then performed 36 times without incident. The difference this time was the dart had to come out of the far event horizon of our jump wormhole, lined up precisely so its flight path carried it through the Elder wormhole. The plan was to jump the dart in 2 light minutes away from the wormhole, given about 3 minutes of flight time before the dart plunged through the event horizon. That was not enough time to make a major course correction, and you might think there wasn't much that could go wrong. No, there was a lot that could go wrong. The math of aiming a jump wormhole while a massive object is going through at relativistic speed is difficult even for Skippy. Jump drive navigation systems have to account for many variables, but the distance between the ship and the near end of the wormhole is supposed to be a constant. Now we had 2 objects going through the wormhole, and Skippy had noticed something odd happening. When we came out the other end, somehow a bit of kinetic energy had transferred between the dart and our ship. Like, Valkyrie would be moving just a tiny bit faster or slower, with the dart reacting the opposite way. According to Skippy, the overall amount of kinetic energy remained the same, which would make Isaac Newton happy. It was not actually a problem, except that even Skippy's ginormous brain could not explain it. The effect was also not predictable, like he couldn't predict whether the dart would gain or lose speed during a particular jump. Then there was the other problem. The flight path of the darts was sometimes subtly changed while it went through our jump wormhole. In the worst incident, the dart came out the far end, moving 1.7 degrees to the left of its direction from when it entered the wormhole. Valkyrie came out behind the dart, moving more than 3 degrees to the right of our previous course. According to Skippy, that could not happen. Once again, Filthy Monkeys had broken the laws of physics and he could not explain it. As a bonus, trying to figure out the weird physics involved would keep him busy for days, possibly weeks, so he wouldn't be waking me up to ask stupid questions. My fear about sending a dart through an Elder wormhole was that our aim would be off and the dart would clip the edge of the wormhole with disastrous consequences. Not a disaster for the wormhole itself. A dart wouldn't cause it to collapse. But the local network might decide that monkeys are irresponsible creatures and lock us out. Then we would be stuck with a dozen darts with no practical way to move them into Maxulk's territory, and no way of forcing the kiddies to clean up the mess they made. The good news was the first dart went through the wormhole without incident. The other 5 darts also flew through that wormhole, all at different emergence points on the wormhole's figure-8 pattern. Then, having proven the technique worked, we left the darts flying silently through empty space and began jumping again toward the next wormhole. Smythe presented me with a top 10 list of targets in Maxulk's territory. The list had extensive supporting documents, the reasoning was sound, and all of the targets would produce dramatic results for us at minimal risk. I tossed it out.
Sir? Smythe asked with a look that I recognized. It said he was a skilled professional career soldier and I was a staff sergeant with limited experience in actual combat. His skepticism didn't bother me. He was absolutely correct. I had been in a lot of fights, but mostly they involved me sitting in a chair making decisions about what other people should do.
Smythe, you did good work, I assured him. But now that we have darts to work with, I want to get more ambitious.
Skippy, what is the toughest target the Maxulks have? Exclude any planets with populations of more than a couple thousand.
Yeesh, you really want to go right to the top?
He took off his ginormous admiral's hat and scratched his head. Yep. We need to make a statement. A statement that says we can hit you anytime, anywhere.
Ah. Smythe gave me a nod of approval. I can answer that. Skippy, bring up an image of Argathos.
Wow. Skippy was impressed. You do want to go big.
Okay.
The display showed an image of a planet that looked like a big moon. Data along the side of the display stated the place was about the size of Mars, but was so dense that surface gravity was 50% greater than the red planet in our home star system. The crust and mantle of the place was super high in iron content, making it a great location for secure underground facilities.
What is this place?
Smythe answered.
It is their main research base, focused on reverse engineering Elder and Rindaloo technologies.
Elder? I looked closer at the display. They have Elder stuff down there?
Maybe we should consider a raid instead of...
That is not possible, sir, Smythe said gently. Seeing my skeptical expression, he relented.
I should have said it is not practical.
Joe, the problem is, Skippy added, I know the Kitties have an extensive facility down there for researching advanced technologies. What I don't have is any detailed information about the layout and internal defenses of the base. I haven't been able to find a catalog of Elder devices the Kitties are supposed to be storing in that place.
Could this be where they keep their Elder AI?
No, if they have an Elder AI, he sniffed.
For damned sure the Kitties are not keeping it at a place like Argathos. They wouldn't want a potentially hostile Elder AI to have access to other Elder technology, duh.
Potentially hostile? I thought the rumor was this AI is helping the Kitties.
If it is helping them, and that is a big if, do you think it trusts the Maxalts who are keeping it captive?
No, I guess not.
And do you think the Kitties trust it?
The Maxalts don't trust anyone, I snorted.
Okay, this all sounds good. A strike at Argathos could demonstrate to the whole galaxy that we can hit anywhere, plus we set back their research efforts.
Why wasn't this place on the list?
Because it's too tough a target, Skippy explained. Three independent layers of strategic defense in orbit, ranging out past 2 light seconds from the surface. The surface is honeycombed with shield projectors, plus maser, particle, and plasma cannons, all in the terawatt range. The SD network can focus over 100 cannons on a single target. Valkyrie would be obliterated before we knew the enemy was shooting at us. Plus, he did the thing where he mimicked taking a breath for dramatic effect.
There are orbital stations that project a distortion field to prevent ships from jumping in near the planet, and there is a field that absorbs and deflects kinetic energy, like the one we use to catch rounds on the shooting range. The type of kinetic absorption field used by the Maxalts is crude compared to the capability the Rindaloo have developed, but the field around Argathos can still slow down a relativistic weapon, enough for the SD network to vaporize it before it hits the surface. Even if a dart somehow does survive to reach the surface intact, it has to punch through 80 kilometers of extremely dense planetary crust to reach the base. The sections of the base are protected by their own armor plating. That I do know.
Good. I pointed at the holographic image of Argathos. Let's do that.
Skippy stared at me in disbelief, but I saw a grin creep onto Smythe's face.
Ugh, the beer can was disgusted.
Did you even listen to anything I said?
I heard everything. Did you pay attention?
Yep, this is the perfect target.
No, it is not, he insisted. The closest a dart could jump in is to emerge at a distance of roughly 1.2 light seconds from the surface of Argathos. From there, it is still 360,000 kilometers to the surface. The dart would encounter the absorption field at 70,000 kilometers from the surface after it has been exposed to fire from the SD network for over a full second. That is a long time for the planetary defenses to detect, track, and focus directed energy against a dart. By the time a dart reached the bottom of the absorption field, it would be moving at barely a tenth the speed of light, presenting an easy target for the defenses. An attempt to strike Argathos could totally backfire on us. It would expose that we hacked into their darts while assuring the rotten Kitties that their most secure facility is safe from us.
No, it won't. Skippy stared at me, then Smythe, then back to me.
Okay, fine.
He shook his head sadly.
Can you at least give me a hint about how you plan to deal with the SD networks and the kinetic absorption field?
It's simple, Skippy, I said,
as Smythe pursed his lips and nodded. He had figured out my plan. If you're keeping score, the score is Monkeys 2, Beer Can 0. The darts will hit so fast the SD networks won't have time to react. And I leaned back in my chair with a very self-satisfied grin. They will just bypass the absorption field. I'm not stupid. Okay, maybe I should say I'm not arrogant. Well, not arrogant enough to be stupid about it. Of course, I explained the plan to make sure there wasn't some pain-in-the-ass physics reason why it wouldn't work. Skippy protested, then thought about it, and admitted he didn't know any reason why it shouldn't work.
Chapter 14. Valkyrie jumped into the Agatha star system about 20 and a half light years from the target. For reference, that's about 4 times the distance from Pluto to the sun. The star system was densely patrolled by starships, drones, and satellites out to 3 light hours from the star, with scattered patrols and hidden sensors covering 4 times that distance. We were being extra careful by jumping in so far away that the star was just a bright blob. The reason for our caution was that Valkyrie could not jump at all for 7 days, or the whole operation would be blown, and we would have to start over. The gamma radiation from our jump wormhole was directed away from the star in a focused burst, making it unlikely that the enemy had detected us. Despite the odds of concealment being in our favor, our battlecruiser accelerated hard for 9 hours before the jump, giving us substantial speed to carry us away from the emergence point. If we were unlucky enough for the enemy to detect our gamma ray burst, by the time the enemy brought ships to investigate, we would be far away, running silent, while wrapped in a stealth field. 10 minutes after we jumped in, Skippy announced he had established our exact position relative to the target. We counted down to the exact moment calculated by Skippy and began firing the big railguns that ran along Valkyrie's spine. Those 3 cannons were not used often in combat because the ship's nose had to be inconveniently pointed at the target. At least railgun projectiles are fire-and-forget weapons. The ship did not have to continue closing the distance to the target while the dart flew ahead. Skippy cranked up the power of the railguns for the operation. They would need to be taken offline for repairs later. Each of the 3 centerline railguns fired 2 shots about 20 minutes apart, with the second shot imparting just a tiny bit more velocity to their projectiles. The difference in speed was so that when the 6 projectiles reached the target 7 days later, the 3 in the second volley would have caught up to the first 3. Like I said, it was only a tiny difference in speed. With the projectiles away, we coasted onward, with nothing to do but wait.